You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Media Democracy Day is an annual forum exploring and celebrating independent media. This year's event took place last month at Simon Fraser University Harbour Centre in Vancouver. Today we'll bring you highlights from the forum. Bob Hackett is a professor of communications at Simon Fraser University and co-author, with William Carroll, of a recent book called Remaking Media, The Struggle to Democratize Public Communication. Bob Hackett told the audience at SFU about the value of independent voices in a world of ever-increasing corporate control over public media. Here is Bob Hackett.
It's a celebration of media democracy and media, democratic media activism. And what I'm going to say in the next 10 minutes is a few themes taken from the book, starting with the idea of why I think we need a Media Democracy Day. And it's something we outline in the first chapter, which, by the way, this book is based on interviews primarily with about 150 media activists in Canada, the United States, and Britain, but about one-third of whom are actually right here in Vancouver. So we did about a third of our interviews. Bill Carroll spoke probably to a number of people in this room a few years ago, and that's what went into the making of this book. So why do we need a Media Democracy Day? Well, we argue it's because of the democratic deficit of the dominant media system, that the corporate and commercial and even the state media taken together do not fully serve the interests and needs of a democratic society, of an informed citizenry, of participatory people participating in shaping their own future. And we isolated in chapter one, eight themes, if you like, from the critical literature that may sound a little bit abstract at first, but then I want to say how, at least in one way, they might affect the lives of all of us. Okay, so the eight themes. The first is the media's failure adequately to constitute a democratic public sphere. That is the arena that a democracy needs in order to shape public opinion on the basis of informed and equal and supposedly, one hopes, rational discussion. And there's, that failure has several different dimensions, as various writers have noted. So these and other writers have specified a number of ways in which the media failed to help provide a democratic public sphere, including the decline of the public service ethos in the last 15 years associated with what Bob McChesney has called the an ethos of hyper-commercialism. Okay, the conflict of interest that results when you have big companies owning a range of different media as well as other industries. There's a potential for conflict of interest when, you know, how can you ask journalists to cover other parts of the same corporate empire that is paying their paychecks? It puts them in a very tough situation. The trivialization of news in many media. It's becoming more and more difficult in the media system as a whole to easily access relevant civic information. Under a, if you like, an avalanche of infotainment driven by commercial imperatives. So that's one theme that critical writers make. A second theme, of course, is the centralization of power, both political and symbolic, that is a byproduct of media concentration and convergence. A third theme is the reinforcement in a commercial media system of inequality. Inequality is of representation and access along lines of gender, ethnicity, language, and class. And I mention class because in a commercial media system, there is an inherent bias towards affluent consumers. Those are the folks that advertisers most need to reach. So if the logic of democracy is one person, one vote, the logic of the market is $1, one vote. Okay, so there's a contradiction there. A commercial media system is disproportionately influenced, if you like, by the tastes and buying decisions of the wealthy. Okay. They have, in a sense, a disproportionate say in what media survive and what media go bankrupt. Fourthly, homogenization. We should not confuse the proliferation and multiplication of channels, TV channels and other media, with genuine diversity. Many writers argue that there's really a similarity of values around narcissistic consumerism, for example, in a commercial media system. A fifth theme is the decline of community, both at local, national, and global levels. Okay? So in the United States particular, in particular, where you've had the Telecommunications Act of 1996 allowing a massive growth of radio concentration of ownership in the radio industry, you've had the virtual disappearance of local news and local programming. to the point where when the local authorities wanted to warn the residents of Mid-Owen, North Dakota that there was a toxic spill resulting from a freight train wreck in their town, they couldn't get it broadcast. They tried to have the local clear channel stations, six of them in North Dakota, broadcast a warning, and they didn't get an answer at the radio station. So when they went there, they found there's actually nobody in the office. Nobody's running the place. It's actually run by computer out of head office, I think in Houston, or San Antonio, thanks. So that's one example of the decline of community from a hyper-commercialized media system. That works at the international level as well, where we still don't have a genuinely transnational media. Media still tend to be nationally based and arguably to reflect the national biases of audiences and donors. The sixth theme is the enclosure of what should be publicly accessible information through increasingly strict intellectual property regimes. I heard in the news a couple of days ago that something like 8,000, is this right? 8,000 people are being taken to court for downloading music around the world. There's a counterattack from, you know, the copyright industries against, if you like, the sharing of certain kinds of information and programming. That's just one example. There's many other arguably more important ways that are politically relevant in which what should be public information ends up being privatized and available only to those who can afford it. A seventh out of the eight themes is the elitism and secrecy, especially in the U.S., with which communications policy is made. Most people in the U.S. don't even know that the airwaves are public property and that the public has a right, you know, to intervene and to say what they think about how, what kind of programming their local broadcasters should be offering. And finally, we have the decline of privacy and free expression rights in the media since the 9/11 attacks, particularly growing surveillance. One thinks of the tapping of phones and of the internet in the United States. So those are the problems. They may seem a little abstract when you put it that way, but let me give you a real life example of how this could affect us. Let me just ask for a show of hands, how many people here have to take a bus to SFU every morning, or most mornings, okay? About half of you. Have you noticed that it's a wee bit difficult to get on? You know, unless you're prepared to hang onto the bumper, you might have to wait for a few buses. Is that still the case? Because I'm now avoiding mornings. Okay, so is that still the case?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, what can we do about it? Somebody suggested, why don't we contact the mayor of Burnaby, Derek Corrigan, who's a really good guy, and he's been working in transit issues for a couple of decades. And he's Burnaby's representative on the Translink board. So I had a good conversation with him, and he said, yes, Professor Hackett, you're right. We need to do something about that line, that bus line, the route from Production Way and the one in from Coquitlam. But the problem is actually much bigger. The problem is a misdirection of resources. You know, with too much money being spent on that expensive line from the airport to downtown so that world-class jet-setters can get, you know, downtown to their downtown hotels faster, doesn't really help local residents as much. Or too much money spent on highways like the twinning of the Portman Bridge at the expense of cutbacks to local bus service, right, like the line to SFU. And he says, part of the reason for that is that there's not enough public awareness and public pressure for change. That people buy into their a particular notion of the Canadian dream, where they want their own, you know, their own space, their own property lot, you know, their own backyard, even if they have to move halfway to Hope to get it, and then commute in from there, right? So he says that's not going to change until public consciousness changes. But the problem, part of the problem, he said, and he didn't know I was a communications professor. Part of the problem is the Pacific Press monopoly in Vancouver. And then he went on to talk about both the Sun in the province and the CanWest media empire locally in general. He said the problem is that they're basically politically in bed with the BC Liberals. That they function, he said, and this is his words, and he told me I couldn't use them, basically as propaganda for the BC Liberal government. And that they're unwilling to challenge, you know, the priorities, and including the transportation policy of that government. I think we could add to that, you know, the dependence of commercial media on automobile revenue doesn't make them, you know, ardent defenders of public transit, typically. And likewise, the real estate industry, that also is a major advertiser in the local press. So I think all this means, I've got about probably 2 minutes, yes? This means it's a very important role for alternative media, the kind of work that Deborah Campbell's doing and David Beers, at the Tyee. And fortunately, I think given those kinds of problems, this is what we have here today, and these forthcoming events over the next 10 days is evidence of a vibrant, if only emerging, media democracy movement. And the slogan, I'll just finish off by telling you a little bit about that. The slogan for Media Democracy Today in the past has been, know the media, change the media, be the media. So that's three sort of dimensions, right? Know the media refers to media education. We have the BC Association for Media Education, which is public school teachers who have gotten media ed curriculum into the schools. We have Adbusters, which does, you know, satirical media critique. Shannon mentioned our work at Newswatch Canada, which tries to highlight blind spots in the news. So there's a fair bit of media education. Change the media. There is at least some efforts to change media policies and structures, okay? You need media education, you need to be aware of the media, but you also need to change the policy framework and the very structure of the media industries that shape the kinds of output, the kinds of content, the kinds of programming that we get in the media system. Now, it's harder to do that, to affect state policy or the funding of media corporations, but there are at least two dimensions that we have in the CPBF that Shannon mentioned. That was our original purpose for coming together, was to try and promote media policy reform. And it came out of a move 10 years ago, a coalition 10 years ago by trade unions, the Council of Canadians, and other public interest groups to try and stop the takeover of many of Canada's newspapers by good old Conrad Black. Does anybody remember him? He's gone on to other things now, like I believe jail. But at the time, you know, there was a significant degree of expansion of concentration of ownership. And that's one area that has to be addressed at a policy level, along with funding for public service media. And then the third dimension is that of be the media, which of course refers to alternative and independent media, which we have right outside here, a selection of some of Vancouver's finest alternative media, nonprofit in many cases, community-oriented. It's a third leg, along with media education and media policy reform, to media democratization that we write about in the book.
That was Bob Hackett, recorded at Media Democracy Day at SFU Harbour Centre last month. He is co-author of Remaking Media, The Struggle to Democratize Public Communication. The book is published by Routledge Press.